When I ate the mashed potatoes, it turned into a cream soup in my mouth. A cream soup, Japanese flavor.
Hell yes. Cream soup Japanese flavor. Nothing like some Iron Chef for a good sexual innuendo intro from my life as a foodie. Welcome back. My name is Phil, and for the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about food. More specifically, Korean food. Hope you all had a good Thanksgiving. I had an excellent Thanksgiving. Hope everything is going well for you. I do have to say one thing before we get going. We're going to do something a little bit different this time. We're not going to talk about beer. Can you imagine? What the hell? Why? What, no beer? Why? I'll tell you why. Because later in the show, you're going to listen to about 8 minutes of me shopping at the Korean market. And yes, I buy beer, but the beer sucks. And I'm sorry, but Korean beer is not very good. I've had a lot of Korean beer, didn't like it. It's drinkable, all right? But I would just as soon tell you how great Budweiser was. And there's a rule about beer on this show. I will not feature a bad beer because this show isn't about bad beer. I want to give you a pleasant experience on both food and beer. And the only reason I ever mention beer on this show anyway is because I'm trying to influence more beer and food pairing. And it's nothing against wine because I love wine. I have appreciated wine longer than I have appreciated beer, but I think that beer is misunderstood, so I try to bring that to the forefront a little bit more. But with this, there was just nothing I could really bring to the table, so we were leaving it out. However, we will be drinking some soju, which is a distilled Korean drink. So there's still booze, and some things never change about this show. There's booze. So I need to take it easy and stay focused because this stuff is going to trip me up. That'll be later in the show. Chris Constantino was one of the contestants on The Next Iron Chef and made it to the final three before losing out to Besh and Simon. And if you don't remember which one he was the guy who wore the black rimmed glasses, had a black goatee and blonde spiky hair. It turns out that Chris specializes in making sausage, and you all know my infatuation with sausage. His ancestors were the founders of Easton Sausage Company, and he is the executive chef of Encanto in San Francisco, where he also serves his charcuterie selection. They're all cured in-house. His sausages range from mortadella to a fragrant fennel salami. They make a sweetbread terrine and a salt-cured pork liver. Now, you also know my infatuation with the rough cuts, or as we say, the nasty bits. Those undesirable cuts of meat like the shoulder or the tongue or the liver and the kidneys. I'm crazy for chicken hearts, all that stuff. Because I think it takes a real chef to be able to cook these things, and I like the challenge of taking something muscular and tough and braising it or cooking it in such a way that it's falling off the bone or more pleasing when you eat it. And I think things like shoulder and the tongue have really incredible flavor, so there really is a huge payoff there. Especially for a home cook. And I did something this Thanksgiving that was interesting, and I wanted to mention that. I used every single scrap of my turkey for a part of the meal or for future meals. And I'm sure everybody does this. But I tried to do something with every part to try to include it in the meal. So when I prepared the turkey, I set all the giblets aside, and I made a pate out of them for the appetizer. So we served that before, and it was really good. And then I used the neck to make the stock for the gravy, and later I pulled the meat off the neck, and I added that to the gravy. And then when the meal was over, and I had picked the carcass completely clean, I used the carcass for stock, as I normally do, and had enough stock to make soups for the next 2 weeks. And we made good meals with that, and everything was perfect, and I felt like I got my money's worth out of the animal. But more importantly, I made sure that the animal died with purpose. And I think, getting more to the point, the people who cook this type of food are more often than not are people from other cultures. And it's something I'm really interested in, is exploring those cultures. And I've told the story of my grandmother making meatballs without any meat in them. Because they were poor. They couldn't afford meat. And a meat was a luxury. So when they made meatballs, when she made meatballs, it was breadcrumbs and milk. And then when they could afford meat, it was usually the cheapest cuts available. Those happen to be the parts that were not high on the hog. And you've heard that expression, right? That high on the hog? That means tenderloins, the chops, the sirloins, the part of the animal that's higher up. So that's what the rich people could afford, and that's what the rich people ate. They, you know, the shoulder, the butt, the tongue, and the feet. I mean, who wants to eat that crap? You give it to the poor people. So it was cheap, and that's what they cooked. They learned to cook these things and to make them palatable and tender, and it forced them, in essence, to be better cooks. And I got into a bit of a discussion this week earlier when this guy posted that his ex-fiance was Filipina, and her family always tried to get him to eat balut, which is it's disgusting, but it's an egg with a bird fetus that's only a few weeks old that's still in the egg, and you open it up and you cook it. And they tried to, her family tried to get him to eat it under the guise that he couldn't marry her unless he ate this. And he later said that he eventually got himself a nice Midwestern white girl on his next go-around. And I'm sure that was a flippant remark, but it got him in trouble, I guess. And, of course, you know, someone takes him to task on it and inferred that his comment was racist. So then he comes back and he says that he didn't mean anything by the comment, of course, and he was only using it as an example of the typical white Midwesterner being noticeably more sheltered about their food choices. And I absolutely defended him on this because he's right. You know, if you go to a market in a predominantly Asian or Mexican neighborhood and you try to find something that falls under the nasty bits category, it's going to be a lot easier for you to find that in a market there than it would be in a market in the whitey part of town, because in white town, they don't cook those things. You know, we don't have to. We're rich. And that point has been proven more often than not. But more to the point of what I'm getting at here is awful. And not awful like, you know, that's awful. O-F-F-A-L. Awful are the parts of a meat animal which are used as food, but which aren't part of the skeletal muscle. So the term actually means off-fall, or the pieces that fall from the carcass when they butcher it. And they hang it upside down, they open it up, and you know, the insides fall out. It used to only apply to the entrails, but now it covers everything. It includes the heart, the liver, lungs, all the outside stuff, the tails, the feet, the head, the brains, the tongue. In the USA, we clean it up. We say organ meats or variety meats because, you know, we're obviously easily offended by these cuts, and we can't take the truth and what they are. But that's how the category that they put them under. And with birds, they just say giblets. So everything that comes from the inside of a bird is considered giblets. Anyway, Chris appeared on a recent episode of Modern Marvels on the History Channel, which is an awesome channel, and hopefully you get this. And I want to play you the part of his segment because it's short. It's only about 4 minutes. And they did a whole episode on the pig and what a great animal it is. And I really couldn't agree more. They wanted to talk about how none of the pig was wasted and how everything gets used. And if it's edible, it's getting eaten. And more importantly, it's usually by non-Americans. And I just thought that part of the show was kind of telling. They actually export pigs' feet and heads and bones and stuff, because there aren't enough people in America who want it, obviously, or who will pay for it. So, you know, I just don't understand. Now, then they say that we're a nation of spoiled rich bastards, and we have to fight that. I mean, think about it. Look at the facts. It's kind of silly. Anyway, here's Chris's piece with the whole segment for him. He's got a whole pig's head, all right, and he's going to split this damn thing open with a cleaver and take the brain out and cook it with mushrooms. And when he does this, I had turned to my wife and I said, look, it's your brain on mushrooms. So I'll go ahead and play this and I'll shut up now.
Even the organs and tidbits, like the tongue and the feet, collectively known as offal, are a prized food source in Asia, Europe, and other continents.
We don't use a lot of the offal products, and we are able to ship them to countries that do utilize them and are willing to pay for them. And it makes up a fairly substantial percentage of the actual profit for the animals that are being shipped.
A handful of trailblazing chefs in America are trying to serve up odd pig parts to the rest of us. At Encanto Restaurant in San Francisco, the house specialty is offal. Like tongue, brain, heart, liver, kidney, feet, and intestine. Or chitlins. Call it Back to the Future.
My grandparents' generation was a firm believer in using it because they were of the World War II generation. You know, they had the rationing stamps, and they could go further with buying a tongue than they could with a pork chop or a pork loin.
In the Encanto kitchen, it all starts from the top.
What we're going to do is debone this pig's head and set it up for porchetta di testa. And then I will remove the brain from the skull. It takes just a little patience to debone a pig's head. It's not that labor intensive if you're accustomed to it. I got a good crack in there now, so she's going to... There she goes. What did you do yesterday, honey? Oh, no, nothing big. I just split a pig's head in half. The brain is too soft and tender to actually sear, so we're going to poach it. You want a nice, gentle poach. Okay? So I'm just going to take that brain. I'm not seasoning it. I'm just going to drop it right in, ever so gently. So, brain's been poached ever so delicately. I'm going to let that sit there and cool. So now it's nice and cool, okay? So I'm going to season that with a little salt. Fresh ground pepper. The nuttiness and earthiness of the mushrooms will really contrast very well with the brain. So, I'm going to add a piece of butter, and now I'm going to add the brain. Right where that butter is, it's going to help caramelize. Give a nice nutty flavor to it, okay? Eating brains will not make you smarter. I've actually been asked that a couple times. Are we going to be smarter today? No, not really. We're going to come right over here. See that brain right there? So we have these beautiful chanterelle mushrooms with capers and lemon brown butter. And the piece de resistance is your fresh pork brain right there. We'll finish that off with a little bit of its sauce.
It may not be brains like your grandfather knew them, but over the last two centuries, many Americans were accustomed to pitching in on slaughtering day.
Then you would have all the offal cuts would be turned into something like a pâtés or terrines. Sausages would be made. Legs would be turned into hams, city hams and salt-cured hams. And the head would be made into head cheese. This was a normal way of life in this country just as much as it was all throughout Europe.
Encanto has evolved the family farm ritual into haute cuisine. How about some kidney with lentils? Or trotter cakes, a new spin on pig's feet. Save room for dessert.
So what we've done is we've taken this great pork blood here and we've made a final dessert. And it's a chocolate blood panna cotta with ancient spice, which is poivrons and cinnamon and cloves. So almost like your Christmassy spices. Blood was a very traditional thickener for sauces and desserts back in the day. And this one is always a big surprise. You would never know there's blood in there unless I told you.
Encanto serves a monthly head-to-tail dinner that's a regular sellout.
There's the direct correlation to oneself where they say, oh, I can't eat tongue, I have one, or I can't eat heart, I have one. So it's getting people to just be willing to try it for the first time, and I think that's when you change their opinion.
Most of us may not be serving up that blood and chocolate panna cotta anytime soon, but there's little doubt that the pig will be on our dinner tables for years to come.
And I'll tell you something, it looked delicious. With the sauce and the butter, I mean, it looked great. I imagine it was. It's probably great. And I'm telling you, if I get the chance, I'm definitely going to hit Encanto the next time I'm in the San Francisco area, because I think it's a lost art, cooking those cuts. And I think it's high time that we spread out a little bit and open up to these things, because, you know, I think we need to hit our roots. If you get a chance, catch this episode of Modern Marvels on the History Channel. I believe it just says pig, or it's about pig or pork. It's showing now, so it's really well done, and Chris is great in it. Okay, so I live in Fullerton, which is in northern Orange County, and it's just a handful of miles south of the LA County border, so I'm not too far from Los Angeles, really. I'm about a half an hour. My particular area has seen a recent rise in Korean population, and as a result, Korean restaurants and markets. So this spells really good things for me because I'm crazy about food, especially any and all things Asian. So I visited the neighborhood Korean market recently to shop for ingredients for a Korean-style barbecue that I was doing for, me and my wife. And it just so happens I recorded it. What luck. Prepare for 8 minutes of a white man faking his way through an Asian supermarket. Trust me, this is a little tough to listen to. Before I play any of the audio of my trip to the market, let's talk about what exactly Korean barbecue is, because it's a really interesting meal, very simple, yet very involved, because there's a lot of things going on. There are two staples to any Korean meal, rice and kimchi. Now, I guess not everybody eats kimchi, and I don't know why. I really don't know why that is, but, you know, whatever. I mean, I find this stuff infectious. It's pickled, spicy, it's kind of funky tasting, and my mouth is watering right now just thinking about it. Those that don't eat kimchi, I think they're lost, and I feel very sorry for them. But in most cases, the two staples on the Korean table are rice and kimchi. Okay, those are the two things that you'll see on any table. So along with rice and kimchi is what is called banchan, which are simple side dishes of a wide variety of different things, and they're all really delicious. They're like a condiment to your rice. So a simple Korean family meal could have as many as 20 bowls and dishes on the table with all sorts of little different things on them. And only poor people would really eat one dish and rice. On that, actually, Koreans, when visiting an American table for the first time, they see what we eat, that we eat the one plate with meat, rice, and vegetables, and they think, you know what, Americans are so rich, why do they eat so poor? You know, because in Korea, it's all about a wide variety of flavors of food, so, you know, there's lots on the table. Not that they're eating a shitload of food, it's just that there's a lot of variety there for them. So you eat a little bit of this, and then a little bit of that, and some rice, and some kimchi, and then there's the barbecue. And I'm a real chili head, all right? I love spicy stuff. And I think this is kind of the part of what I love about Korean food, that, you know, you have that option all the time. You can really eat some hot things at a Korean table. And they say if you want to make your Korean host feel really good to show that you really enjoyed the meal, that by the end of the meal, you should be sweating and burping. Now, I tried this at our table, and my wife, she wasn't all that pleased with this. So, you know, she didn't like that line of thinking, I guess. So I didn't want to press it. Anyway, the Korean barbecue is usually sliced ribeye or thinly sliced spare ribs that you cut apart with scissors. Whether you're eating bulgogi, kalbi, or changal, which is a Korean version of sukiyaki, it's all placed on the burners in the middle of the table. Again, this is not a custom that I can get my wife to agree with on the $1,500 dining table that we own, so I grill all my stuff outside and I bring it to the table. Anyway, getting back to the kimchi, the kimchi, you know, which aside from all the flavorful beef and all the side dishes and stuff, the kimchi, really, it's my favorite part of the meal. I have to say it's my favorite part. There's no question about it. I love kimchi because it's a strange thing. If you don't know what it is and you just eat it, you're better off, but to hell with that. I'm going to describe it anyway. Yeah, the process itself really sounds disgusting. And I had it explained to me, and I thought, okay, whatever, because I liked it. Imagine split heads of cabbage, chili paste, bean curds, soy sauce, salt, vinegar, and then they put that into a clay pot. They bury it halfway in the ground, and then they let it sit in the sun for like months to ferment until it's rotten. That's disgusting, right? That's kimchi. It's the heart and soul of Korean food, kimchi. The end result of all that work and fermentation is still crunchy. I mean, you bite into this stuff. It's a crunchy cabbage condiment. And I can't speak enough for it. It speaks for Korea. The kimchi that I'm going to be buying shortly on this trip I'm taking, it's mass-produced, but the taste of it is all the same nonetheless. So let's go shopping, okay? And I should warn you, this is a complete debacle. I'm the only English-speaking American in the place, all right? I think I'm the only man in the place that doesn't work there. I'm the only guy that's shopping. It's every time I go, men don't shop there, I guess. I can't get anyone to talk to me. And the kimchi guy was speaking with his hands, and I think he was deaf. So leave it to me, the king of interviews.
Korean barbecue. First thing we're going to do is pick up some soju. There's a shitload of it. There's some. You can get the expensive stuff, but it's not all that expensive. Okay, you get two different kinds of soju. You need a basket. Let's get a basket. I stand out in here. I'm the only tall white guy in the place. and the music is really great. All right, let's go harass the butcher. Hey, sir.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I want to do a Korean barbecue. Is this good for Korean barbecue?
This one, you want the rib? This is without bones.
Just the standard without bones, yeah?
That's
what I wanted, without the bones.
Yes,
is it? How do you serve it best? Grilled?
On the frying pan.
On the frying pan?
Yeah.
And then how do you just eat it plain, or do you wrap it in something? How do you eat it? You don't need to wrap?
Heat on the fry pan, or you can look at it about some color, it's a little bit brown. Like that. Yeah,
and then when you serve it, do you serve it with lettuce, or do you just eat it plain?
No, you don't need anything.
Nothing, just like that?
Yeah, just like that. Just ready for cooking.
Okay.
Everything in there is already.
And then you serve with rice?
Yeah.
And kimchi too?
Right. Yeah, with kimchi.
And kimchi?
More taste, yeah.
Okay.
More better taste.
Anything else? What do you like? How do you like it?
That's it?
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. Got seaweed salad, Japanese pickle, salted oysters. Must be cut. It's a lot of different kinds of kimchi.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different kinds of kimchi. Is it all usually cabbage, or do you do other kinds of kimchi? Yeah. Is it, because there's all different kinds. There's like
all different kinds.
Yeah.
White kimchi or sash kimchi.
Okay.
The whole kimchi.
Yeah, I see. The whole cabbage.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Cabbage.
And then these are just the sliced cabbage.
Sliced cabbage.
Okay.
Sliced cabbage.
Okay. And this is standard cabbage, the standard kimchi. Oh, okay. I don't know much about it, so I'm learning. Yeah. But then I see the white stuff.
Oh, white. Okay.
Like the water radish.
It is kimchi.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, water kimchi.
Okay, I see. So that's got the whole cabbage in it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, man.
Got some fish cake. I'll try that. Leave it to me to interview a guy. Doesn't speak English, which is, you know, of course, then I think he might be deaf. Can you fucking believe that? I go to interview the guy, and I think he's deaf. I'm doomed with this interview stuff. These Korean beers, they have height, OB, they have Asahi, that's Japanese. Sapporo is also Japanese. There's one called Cass. Oriental Brewery. Picture of this hype beer. We're gonna get drunk. What's this stuff? Dong Dong Ju. Table wine. Look at Ma Dong. What's that made with? If I asked for some Dong Dong Ju, I'm not exactly sure what I'd get. What'd you order? Some Dong Dong Ju. Oh, you don't want that. No, I don't stand out at all. 6'7" white guy.
What's good?
No, that's all me.
ID?
You want my ID? Oh, God bless you. Here, let me take it out for you.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Should give you a tip. All right, thank you. Yeah, this wasn't all bad. I tried to do an interview on kimchi and talked to a guy who was deaf. However, as I'm checking out and buying alcohol, she asked me for my ID. I get carded. Okay, so I talked to a guy who's deaf, and the woman who checked me out's blind. What a place. And that's what it's like, shopping at the Korean market.
Okay, so what I came back with was this, beef bulgogi. It's the sliced ribeye steak in the marinade. I cooked that on the grill. I got the kimchi. I got two condiments that I bought. They're spicy fish cakes, which aren't really that fishy. They're not fishy at all, in fact. So I don't know what's going on with that. It tastes more like a spicy pancake. It's delicious. It's awesome. I can't even describe the flavor. I tried so many times to try to put my finger on what it was, and I couldn't. There's the seaweed salad. Now, the seaweed salad's another thing that sounds kind of nasty, but it's actually really good. In fact, the cook, whoever makes this stuff, must like sesame oil because there's a lot of sesame oil on it. You can taste it all the way through this. It had whole sesame seeds in it, too. It was really nice. I got two different kinds of soju, which we're going to talk about shortly. I've got them over here. And then I bought some Korean rice wine, which was, you know, okay, not great. It's kind of milky. You know, you think it would taste like sake, but it's milky. It's weird. And then I got the Hite beer, which I'm not going to go into for obvious reasons. So check out the slideshow on the website because I've posted all the images of the food pre and post prep. Okay, my wife likes this meal with fried rice, so I made that instead of just steamed. And the fried rice is great, so there's, you know, no law that said we had to have steamed rice. And, you know, being the true Westerners that we are, we had it all on the plate because I wasn't going to put 10 different plates on the table for just the two of us. We have had a true Korean dinner here before, and the table was full of stuff. So there was much more stuff then that I bought this time around. Getting back to the barbecue, what they are, thin strips of ribeye steak that are marinated in a sauce that's made with sesame oil, sugar, onions, garlic, soy sauce, stuff like that. Bulgogi is usually grilled, but as you heard the guy at the counter say, pan frying is common. Because he was like, I say grill, he goes, no, pan fry. I don't like pan frying meat. All right, you got a grill, you should use it. Meat should be grilled or braised, but if you want to pan fry it, knock yourself out. It's no big deal, but you know, I like grilled. Whole cloves of garlic, sliced onions, and some chopped green peppers, they sometimes put those together, and then they cook that with the meat at the same time, so you serve it all together. And then you serve the beef with leaves of lettuce, like butter lettuce is the best. You wrap the meat in the lettuce, and then you eat it by hand with the lettuce on the outside. Or you can just eat the meat plain, like he said at the counter. I like it plain. So, you know, I kind of like it plain, too. Really, there are no rules. You eat it how you like it. And, you know, whatever makes you happy is going to make the host happy. So I've posted a recipe for bulgogi on the website. It's very simple. Download it. Give it a try. It's a very simple marinade, and the beef is delicious. The key here is to let it marinate for 24 hours, and it will be awesome. I swear to you, 24 hours in the fridge. Just make the marinade, put it in a Ziploc bag, get the air out of it, put that in a bowl or somehow so it doesn't leak, and then leave it in the fridge for 24 hours, come back the next day, and cook that stuff. And if you get a chance, forget the pan frying, all right? Anything that tastes good pan fried is going to taste even better on the grill. So let's talk about this soju. If you don't know what it is, it's the national drink of Korea. Basically, it's to Korea what sake is to Japan, or what bourbon is to the U.S., or what wine is to France or Italy. Okay, it's traditionally it's a traditional drink, and back in the day, back in, you know, the old days, it was made with wheat, and it was mixed with water, and then made into a big cake, and they would leave that to dry and ferment for like, you know, a couple weeks, and then they'd mix that with water, break it down, mix it with water, and they'd distill it, and it had a hell of a kick. I mean, it was like white lightning. It was 90% alcohol, but now in modern day Korea, they make it with sweet potatoes and tapioca. And the taste is completely different because it's a lower alcohol drink and it's made with different ingredients. I purchased two different kinds of soju at the store, one being made primarily from sweet potatoes, and the other was made with sweet potatoes and the addition of green tea. The alcohol on these range from 20 to 25%, so it's about 40 to 50 proof and, you know, roughly half the alcohol content of vodka. So you can really drink the hell out of this stuff, but you need to be careful because I think it's got twice the alcohol content of wine, so you can still get yourself in trouble. It's getting really popular here in the U.S. because they're making it a base for cocktails. They like to blend it with fruit juices and stuff, but I like it straight up. When you're in Korea, and this is kind of cool, in Korea, when you're around other Koreans and you're partying with the stuff, it's traditional to pour for your guests and then for them to pour back for you. So when you pour with two hands on the bottle. Okay, both your hands on the bottle, and they accept the drink with both hands on the glass, even if it's a shot glass. This is a sign that you really care about them and they care about you. And, in addition, it's a sign of respect for you to turn your head when you drink in front of someone who's much older than you. Which, this is like, you know, you respect your elders is one thing, but this is carrying it, you know, too far. And I'll tell you something else, man, thank God that my mother wasn't Korean. I'd never seen that woman. So let's taste these two things side by side. I've got, first one here is Kyungwol. I'm going to slaughter that because I'm not Korean. Kyungwol Green Soju. It's made with sweet potato, and that's it. Just the sweet potato, and it's 24% alcohol. I'm just going to pour a little bit because I do not want to get screwed up. Oh, that doesn't matter. I'm ending the show soon. Oh, it looks like we're going over the 30 minutes, huh? Okay, this is the green soju from Kyungwol. Gunbye. Oh, I forgot to say that. Gunbye. That's the cheers. Gunbye. You know what? It smells like vodka. And it kind of tastes like vodka when you put it in your mouth. But then when you, after you drink it, it's not vodka. It's like a strong sake. It's a lot different than sake, though. It's kind of hard to describe. It really is. It's hard to describe. Okay. That was that one. Now I'm going to do the San Soju, which is distilled from sweet potato and a green tea extract. Interesting. And this is lower in alcohol. This one's 21%. These are cheap, too. You get a little bit there. What, how many? 375 milliliters. So, what is that? Like a fifth? You get 375 milliliters for about $4. So, it's not very expensive. Right? I'm going to try this one. Not as much of a nose on that one. That's a little lighter. The same vodka flavor. Well, that's good. Well, I can get in trouble with this. My goodness. This is drinkable. This is really drinkable. There are a lot of other styles of soju in Korea. I mean, it's really popular. I mean, they're getting carried away. They're bringing them over here, too. They're fruit-infused. So imagine this with some fruit in it. You know, they make it with cherries and berries and lemons and oranges and stuff. And they make like a vodka cooler. Okay, gunbye again. Let's drink. Oh, man, that's good. Soju. I love me some Korea. An Italian in Korea. Go figure. All right. So listen, before I go, I want to throw out an announcement and then a plug. I'm featured on the next episode of Big Foamy Head. My buddies Rick and Dick down at Big Foamy Head. I'm not sure which show number it's going to be, but it's the sexiest beer show or the sexy beer show, something like that. Keep your eyes out on the blog. I'll post a link to it or visit BigFoamyHead.com. Check that out. I'm a guest on the show. I do about a half an hour or half the show with them. The big thing was that you know, I entered a nomination for the Sexiest Beer Alive contest. Dick gets this idea because People Magazine does the Sexiest Man Alive. Esquire does the Sexiest Woman of the Year or Sexiest Woman Alive. And it's very popular. And so what he does, he decided to make his contest with the Sexiest Beer Alive. So the beer has to be sexy. And it has to be alive, which means that it's bottle conditioned. So there's yeast in the bottle producing carbonation. And so I entered, and you don't want to miss my nomination. So it's pretty sexy. It's Damnation from Russian River Brewing, which I had on the show a few episodes back. So there's a tie in there. Aren't I smart? Check it out, BigFoamyHead.com. Okay, listen. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to look at the slideshow on the website. zeroface.wordpress.com. Download the recipe for the bulgogi and make that, and check out Modern Marvels with Chris Constantino, the pig episode on the History Channel. Listen, check out Korean food next time you get a chance. Don't be afraid of it, all right? Don't fear the kimchi, and certainly don't fear soju. It's deadly and it's good. Cheers, everybody. We'll see you next time. Once again, gunbye.